Welcome back to this week's edition of Smart Mouth. This week, it's a little loud. You can hear that we are at the Palm Desert Food and Wine Festival. And our guest for this episode is just a regular guy with a cool job. That's how you wanted to be introduced, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, some people call me chef or executive chef, but just a regular guy with a cool job. I think that fits.
It's Tori McPhail. He is the chef at the, I'm going to say, world-famous Commander's Palace in New Orleans.
I think it's fair. I mean, these days, after 124 years, I feel like we've got a little bit of a reputation. Sure.
Yeah. Did it become world-famous under your watch?
No, I'm just like the keeper of the flame at this point.
Okay.
Right? There's a lot of other folks that had much, much more to do with it at an earlier start than I did, but now have been there for 23 years, but the executive chef for 15. But lived all over the place, have come and gone many times. But this third time around, I kind of think things have stuck a little bit. So the longest seated chef ever.
You're the longest chef ever there.
Yeah, so I think Paul Perdome was there for about 10 years. And I think we've had four chefs in 47 years. And so it was Paul Perdome since the Brennans bought it back in like 1970.
Okay.
So Paul, my buddy Emeril, and then Jamie Shannon, he was there for 12, and now I'm there for 15.
So Paul and Emeril in particular are very, very famous people. Do you feel pressure, like on the job, when you're cooking, are you like, oh shit, here I am, pressure?
Well, I don't know. I think pressure comes from a good place because we want to run a really darn good restaurant and we want our food to really be inspiring. You know, if somebody's going to come in from across the country and they want to sit down and have a fantastic meal, I want every bite to be like, wow, this is exactly why I paid to be able to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And so pressure in that sense, yes. But I don't think pressure necessarily just because it's the other chefs. It's just what we do. It's what I love to do. I'm very passionate about it. So that's kind of the scoop.
So let's talk a little bit about your background because you are cooking in Louisiana. It's sort of a temple of Creole food, but I have this theory. I'm a religious studies major, and I have found that usually the converts to the religion are the most passionate and also the most knowledgeable. And you, like me, grew up in Washington State.
Right.
We don't know about Creole food where we come from.
That's very true. Yeah, the cooking in Seattle and in Ferndale, Washington, where I grew up, is way different than New Orleans.
Yeah.
It could not be more polar opposite. So yeah, even as I got into culinary school, it was kind of like finding my way. I was, you know, right out of high school. I had no idea that my life would end up with me in New Orleans or eventually becoming the chef of one of the most popular restaurants in the United States. But everything just kind of fell into place. And, you know, you talked about passion earlier. I mean, I think people in Louisiana are extremely passionate about whatever they're really, really into. You know, for me, I'm a chef. It's what I do. I'm all about food.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all works out.
Now, when you say that you went to culinary school, you did the program at Seattle Central Community College. Is that correct?
Yes, so mine was South Seattle.
Oh, okay. And that's a really well-known program for culinary school.
It's a really well-known program, not as much 20-some years ago when I was a kid kind of growing up. But I graduated high school early and enrolled when I was 16.
Okay.
Right?
That's young. That's
really, really young.
Intimidating, I would imagine.
Finished high school and then literally just graduated, moved right down to Seattle on my own, and started working my tail off, studying my brains out. And I was always kind of the kid in high school that got like C's because I just wanted to like run around and party and play music and all that.
Yes.
But once I got to culinary schools, it was straight A's. Graduated at the top of my class, and everything just kind of fell into place.
You feel like you found your calling, and that's why you started getting good grades because you cared.
Yeah, you know, a lot of folks were studying and finding the food and the recipes very, very difficult. For me, I just felt very much at home, and I just felt like that's what I was meant to do. All right, so I think being a professional chef serves me well, but I don't think if I was doing this, I think I might like to be a professional fishing guide. Maybe hanging out in the Florida Keys, hang out.
So no. Florida Keys, so warm fishing guide, not cold Washington State fishing guide.
Yeah, like wet swim trunks and a Heineken.
I mean, you know? That sounds really fun, too. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's fun.
So when you go to culinary school, you're in a specific location, especially one that's not one of the chain for-profit culinary schools. Do you feel like you were specifically learning how to cook, like, in the Western Washington style? Was there a lot of seafood and produce, or did they try and give you a little bit of everything?
Yeah, so when you enroll in culinary school, they try to teach you the basics of good modern cooking, and all that is more like based on French techniques. right? So we studied all the French terms and all that. I mean, certainly they have fantastic food all over the world, but that was kind of like the initial focus. You know, as you get further along in school, you know, certainly when you're cooking seafood, it's great salmon and halibut and rockfish and, you know, everything that comes from your specific or regional location. And so I was just very fortunate to be able to grow up in the Pacific Northwest where we have so much great local ingredients. It's been great. You know, I think it'd be different if I grew up in Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do think it's interesting, though, that when we talk about classical culinary training, we talk about French food. Because I think there's a slowly growing acceptance that Chinese food is, like, just as dope and technical and older than French food.
I would absolutely agree. You know, certainly that their cuisine dates back further than even the stuff in France. And those guys have fantastic, unbelievable, amazing stuff. But I think for American culinary schools, I think they've always just kind of gravitated towards French.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure, you know, Asian countries, they probably gravitate more towards, like, Chinese as the, you know, original.
Maybe.
Great food.
Although French still has it on lock, like, the world over. That's still what people think of as fancy.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of French people moved over to Louisiana about 300 years ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Especially. So how did you know that you were getting into Creole food before you went to Louisiana, or which happened first?
So actually, it's odd, but I took really good advice. In my culinary school career counselor said, hey, look, man, if you're lucky enough to go to New Orleans, do it. And so I left that meeting, and I walked over to the bookstore at the campus at South Seattle, and I saw one of the first things I see is this guy. He's got his arms out. He's got black glasses on. He's kind of got, like, black curly hair, and he's leaning over this crawfish boil pot, and on the name it says Emeril Lagasse, right? And I was like, well, I've never heard of that guy, right? So I'm going to buy his book. And so that's what I read on the plane as I was leaving Seattle for New Orleans, but had no idea that I'd be following in his footsteps, running one of the best restaurants in the city. So it was pretty cool, but maybe fate, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. So where did you start cooking first when you got to New Orleans?
I was lucky enough to get a job interview at Commander's, and Jamie had just taken over for Emeril. And so he hired me when I was a 19-year-old kid, and I started working the appetizer station, right? Cold appetizers and hors d'oeuvres.
That's amazing that you got in right away. So for those of us who don't know, I think it's interesting that there are different stations in a restaurant kitchen. And appetizers is one of the ones where a beginner would start, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So right now we have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We have 11 cooking stations in our kitchen. And they can kind of be viewed as maybe like the culinary career ladder.
Okay.
And so everybody does a stage these days. And so you jump into the kitchen and you work for, you know, a shift to kind of find your way. When I was just starting out there, we didn't quite do that. But you always kind of start towards the bottom, see what you got, and then kind of work your way up. And then
and towards the bottom, that would be the appetizers and the salad stations?
Yeah, so my first station was like hors d'oeuvres.
Okay.
Cheese, cold appetizers, salad, something like that. And so I think at that age, I kind of made the cycle of all 11 stations quicker than anybody else ever had.
Because you were youthful and full of pep and...
yeah, you know what I mean? I just, you know, I'm a very active guy. I try to have a pair of running shoes on as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
And you got to be fast. You got to be good at what you do. And so I just ripped around on the stations and had a whole heck of a lot of fun. And at that age, at that time in my life, the drinking age was 19. So it worked out perfectly. It was great. So,
was it a big party time for you? Was it a work hard, play hard situation?
It was work hard, play hard. And it was me and my buddy Matt, who went on to be on the cover of Food & Wine magazine as one of the best new chefs.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
Way back in 2000 something. Anyway, cool guy. But we actually, when we first moved down to New Orleans, we wanted to live by the university district because we're all kind of that same age,
uh-huh.
or for the French Quarter. And so our first apartment we got was in the 1200 block of Bourbon Street.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? And so it was pretty wild. I can't tell you all the stories here. I know it is a podcast and all that.
We already have the explicit tag on the podcast.
Then
you
we're
go
good.
Nuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just drinking my first margarita, but my third one.
Oh, we should have gotten you later in the day. Shoot. We did this out of order.
Dang it.
Okay. So was there a point at which you had to be like, that's probably enough Bourbon Street for me?
See, it took me about 6 months.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Right? But that was our six-month lease, and when that was up, we decided to move a little closer to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's New Orleans is very hot in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when you move from Seattle in April and then it's July,
yeah.
and you've got to ride a bicycle
yeah.
for like a couple miles through the streets of the French Quarter, all the way to Commander's. You are dripping wet by the time you get there,
Ugh.
Right?
Ugh.
And do that for the entire summer. I think I dropped 25 pounds.
Yeah, but and that's just truly losing your Seattle weight.
Like, yeah, that's it.
That's
yeah.
all it
that's,
is.
That's right. I earned my wings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. So is there, just because I'm getting all curious, is there in the stations in a restaurant kitchen like a hierarchy that everyone knows and everyone is striving for the same station? Or are there people there who are like, no, I legitimately want to be just cooking fish for my career. It's what I love
yeah.
to do.
I think you see more of that in kind of in the pastry. You know, some folks say, hey, look, I'm a sweets person. But all the savory guys, you know, there is, I think, pleasant competition.
Okay.
Right? It comes from a good place.
Okay.
Right? It's not like like any backstabbing, anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But everybody wants to move up and get the next promotion and get the next raise. And Commander's is not the type of place where we do anything strictly like by the book. As
okay.
an example, like I don't say, hey, you know, in 3 months we're going to do this. We're going to do a review after 6 months. We got to do this stuff exactly. If you are kicking ass and you're a fantastic cook, great. You can get a raise in 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Or the next promotion.
That's
so
quick. Have you really promoted people within 2 weeks?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you never know exactly what you're going to get. That's why we do stages for everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And until you really
and
work.
Stage being the French pronunciation of stage,
yeah.
which is sort of like a trial run, right?
Yeah, that's it. So it's kind of similar to what you might see on Top Chef a little bit. And so part of the interview process is, first of all, you show up in a business suit.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Like a suit and tie. Now, if anybody comes in and Chuck Taylor's in a T-shirt, there you go, man.
Okay.
Cruise on down the street.
Okay.
It's one of the most professionally run kitchens in the South. And so I want our guys to be ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
And when you guys come for an interview with us, it needs to be pretty straightforward. So, you know, you get through the first interview, I'll have them sit down with either myself or the other sous chefs, and then next day they'll turn up and work a shift side by side with us.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a much, much better idea on exactly what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to be honest with you, it's more for them than us. Because some people say, hey, man, I want to work at Commander's. And they get there and they're like, oh, shit. I mean,
right.
this is like real cooking. This is not like doing it from the sidelines.
Right.
And, you know, you got to get in there, get your hands dirty and get sweaty and wet and tired. And
mm-hmm.
that's what we do.
And if they make it through the stage, you're like, okay, congratulations. You get to peel potatoes for the next 6 months?
Not necessarily. You know, I view turnover as a healthy and positive thing. It's nice to see people leave us and they get a great sous chef's job or, you know, go be like the first cook at the next restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have folks that come in. I hired one lady. She was from Central America and never worked in a professional kitchen before.
Mm-hmm.
But on her stage, she didn't know exactly what to make. And I said, hey, look, just make something for your heart, but whatever you do, make it the best you've ever done. And so she made me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right?
Oh.
But she picked out the freshest loaf of bread, and she cut it herself, and each piece was perfectly cut top to bottom, even, right? And then she made pecan butter, and she took just like grandma used to do, right? Put it in the RoboCoupe, right?
Uh-huh.
Added vanilla, added a little bit of honey until it was nice and smooth, and then made fresh jam with some berries, cooked them down, and then made the sandwich, and then cut the crust off, cut it into triangles, then lined them up, and it was the best peanut butter jelly sandwich I think I ever had.
Were you
and she got the job.
Yeah.
Right?
That's beautiful.
And then there's these other dingbats that spent $80,000 of mom and dad's money. They went to CIA, and they're just dumb.
Yeah. I do think that overall we're starting to realize that a lot of college educations are maybe not all that they're cracked up to be.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some big culinary schools that churn people through it. You know, a lot of them say, hey, look, you need to have Summit cooking experience, but
mm-hmm.
that kind of means like Subway, right? When they kind of get into our kitchen, they're like, yeah, cool, I'm going to apply for a sous chef's position. And they're like 18. I'm
yeah.
Like, no, brother, that's not how that works. Right?
But they know how to make the swans out of foil, right?
But that's actually our back waiters.
Oh, okay.
I think
we
probably
go
through more tinfoil at our restaurant with like, what do you call it, like origami?
Yeah.
Or tinfoil stuff for
yeah.
like people take a little something home.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's funny. You know?
So did that woman who made you the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, did she end up in pastry?
She started out in production. And so kind of like the right-hand person for the saucier.
Okay.
And so we taught her how to make gumbo 50 gallons at a time. Then how you drop, you know, 400 pounds of turtle soup in a week. And she did great. You know, she was just, you know, jumping in and, you know.
I feel like knowing how to make that much gumbo makes you really popular really quickly.
I think you're pretty popular with the family.
Yeah.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
I mean, these days, I come back for the holidays, and my mom's like, do you think you can fly back with like 10 pounds of crawfish, please, and fresh bluefin tuna? I'm like, yeah, Mom, that's fine. No problem at all.
I do feel bad for chefs because they always end up cooking at social events.
Yeah.
At least plating, at least something.
Yeah.
No rest for you wicked people.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works. But we're odd people with crazy behavior anyway.
That's very true. And speaking of that, I was wondering, because we were talking about like the different stations and all that, and pastry is a little bit of a different track. Do you think that there is a stigma if a man wants to go into pastry full time? Do you think that even subconsciously all the other dudes in the kitchen are like, come on?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think it used to be that kind of that way maybe 20 years ago, mm-hmm. kind of when I was starting out, maybe. Mm-hmm. There was a idea that that guys learn how to cook from their mothers and grandmothers, yet all the professional kitchens are loaded with gentlemen.
Yeah.
Right? And then all the girls are better at pastry, so that's a scoop. I think these days, though, it's definitely flipped. You know, I see some badass young ladies that come in, and they can rock a saute station better than anybody.
Uh-huh.
It keeps the boys honest, and I like it. I really do. It is not... It's not uncommon these days where every single employee in the kitchen is all females, right?
So do you think that's just because restaurant work is becoming a more welcoming place for women?
I think, nobody screams and yells and we don't throw anything like Gordon Ramsay or some of the crazy stuff you see on TV. It's
uh-huh.
just not how we operate. But I think it's a great place for great ladies and gentlemen that really want to serve other great ladies and gentlemen, and that's the deal.
Such a you know? Political but answer.
It's you know, it's not the place where everybody's like hanging out in the kitchen smoking cigarettes and you know, doing bong hits or anything. But
so just, you know, people being polite to each other.
Yeah, if you can't be nice to your own family, then how are you going to cook happy food?
I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
So I, like I said earlier, don't really know anything about Southern food, and I had to look up the difference between Creole and Cajun.
Yeah.
And one definition that I saw was that Creole is city food and Cajun is country food.
Yeah, that's like the simple Reader's Digest version of it.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little more.
So Cajun food, you know, you have to really look at the history of Louisiana. If you go back 300 years, Cajun food was always more the food that came from the country. And so when the French and Spanish government was encouraging people to settle the land,
uh-huh.
you know, they would get like two pigs, two chickens. They would get a shovel and, you know, basic stuff to be able to work the land, and they'd get their plot of land. And
so the governments would provide them with the livestock even?
Livestock and kind of get them a little bit of a start. They give uh-huh. them basic tools so they can work the land and kind of settle the area. And so you would say, hey, simple cuisine is simple cooking. So those guys they didn't have a whole lot of money.
Right.
And so they'd have one nice cast iron pot for the entire family. They have some cast iron pans or what have you. And so all the food out there is like more like soups and stews and jambalaya and etouffee, stuff like that. Whereas city food, you know, you're on the banks of the Mississippi River, so you'd have a lot more commerce.
Uh-huh.
It had a more diverse culture just due to being a port city.
Right.
A lot more
center of trade and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's it. So our food in the city became a lot more refined. You know, you could go to the market every day and you get fresh herbs and fresh dairy
mm-hmm.
and better, fresher ingredients. The food became more refined to reflect that culture.
Okay. Got it. So, and then another one, tell me if you think this is true. This is such a funny distinction.
Yeah.
Creole food uses tomatoes. Cajun does not.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
No. Now, some folks say that jambalaya should never, ever have tomatoes in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to be from, like, Gonzales or something like that. But, yeah, certainly the city food has a lot more dairy, richer ingredients. Country food tends to be not too much dairy because pigs were a lot hardier than cows.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you had the use of real butter, that was a luxury. You know, if you had cream, if you had dairy, milk, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very special event, whereas Cajun food is always based on like lard or animal fat. Okay, so it was much more of a richer, rustic type of cuisine.
So I feel like we should even go back further to the difference between Creole and Cajun people.
Yep.
And Cajun comes from Acadian.
Correct.
Which was people whose own ancestors had been from France, who moved to the eastern seaboard part of Canada.
Yeah.
And then England and France got in a fight. as they were wont to do throughout the course of history.
Yeah, that's it.
And the English people were like, hey, Frenchies, out of here.
Yeah, that's kind of the deal. So I think they originally left from, like, religious persecution.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came across, and I've heard some stories that kind of said, you know, some folks would kind of populate present-day Nova Scotia.
Yep.
Right? French Canadians and all that stuff. And then they would use the boats and make rafts and even come down the Mississippi River. It's part of it.
Oh, so was that the sort of way, the throughway that they got down there was on the river?
Either the down through the Mississippi River or around through the Gulf of Mexico and then up the Mississippi that
mm-hmm.
way.
Okay.
Interesting. And so
even
a lot of the shotgun houses on the side of the Mississippi River, they're all what they call barge board.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of the trade that would come through the Midwest, they would build these wooden barges in the Midwest or the headwaters of the Mississippi River, and they would load up all the goods. They'd float it down to New Orleans. They'd dismantle all the barges, and that became the bones for all of the Creole cottages and shotgun houses in uptown and around the city.
Okay.
And then they would just have, like, thinner wood to be able to finish the houses, but all that barge board stuff was really, really thick.
Oh, okay.
And made great houses.
Can you tell me what shotgun house means, though? I can picture it, but I don't know why it's called that.
Yeah, so, you know, if you cruise up and down the streets of New Orleans, the homes look very similar. They would have long rectangular lots, and so you'd have a lot of houses, you know, on a block.
Mm-hmm.
But they call it a shotgun house because you can almost shoot a shotgun through it. Right?
Oh, okay.
All right, so you have the front door open and your back door open to try to get a breeze before the days of air conditioning, right? And so they would line up all the houses so the breeze could come in one half, but it's forced to go through all the rooms. And at that time, it was their own version of air conditioning, right?
That makes a lot of sense. That's smart.
It's kind of the deal.
That's good thinking. Yeah. And then, so that is the Cajun people, and then the Creole people sort of refers to people who, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but it's both people more specifically to New Orleans, but originally rich people, but then became sort of more ethnically mixed. That seems to be the definition of, like, Creole versus, like, Cajun.
Yeah. So certainly Cajun people would be more from, like, the country, more out towards, like, Lafayette mm-hmm. and, like, western Louisiana,
okay.
where the people of Orleans Parish were the Creoles.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Creoles, you know, originally it was the French Quarter, but the Spanish flag flew over New Orleans for more than 50 years, right? So it kind of has this mix of French and Spain, but generally the people in the Quarter, they were more affluent. They could afford a nice home. They had a richer tastes. They just had more cultural exchange than some of the folks out towards the country. And I think the culture in New Orleans really kind of sprung from that. So basics, you know, Creole food tends to be a little bit more elegant, a little more refined. You would have trained chefs brought over from France. And, you know, it wasn't even until Paul Perdome back in the 70s that we ever had an American chef at Commander's Palace. It was always the French chefs or Spanish chefs, which predominantly France. Those guys we had brought over from great restaurants around France to help New Orleans really kind of get the food on the map.
Now, tell us about Commander's Palace as it, like, fits into New Orleans history, because it's been around for a minute.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. Originally, even, like, all the historical documents and the, what do you call those plaques they put on the outside of a building? It's like a historical marker,
mm-hmm.
right? They all said, you know, originally built in 1880, right, by Emile Commander. We know today that is incorrect. It was actually built in 1893 by Emile Commander for his daughter. She never got married, so for whatever reason, she never took residence, but it was originally built as her home.
Oh. She wasn't
the
allowed
street.
To move in unless she had a dude?
I don't know, man. I don't know what the scoop was, but...
That's bullshit.
That's crap. I can't even believe that. Way to go, Dad.
What a dick.
oddly enough, Emile Commander built the first Delmonico restaurant on St. Charles Avenue. Currently, it's Emeril's Delmonico. But, so originally built in 1893.
And so how long did it take for them to be like, okay, well, this isn't going to be a house. Let's serve some food out of it.
So, it was a brand new building. And at that time, New Orleans was expanding really, really quickly. And so it used to be in that part of the city. We call it the Garden District. But it used to be huge plots of plantation. And as the city was expanding outside of the Central Business District and the French Quarter, they decided, hey, look, we really need a neighborhood restaurant. And so from the get-go, when Miss Commander never took residence, they're like, well, we need to do something to get our money back. And so they turned it into a restaurant. And, you know, they had several owners throughout the years, but it was kind of maybe a didn't have the best reputation. It used to be.
Was it a brothel?
It didn't have the best reputation.
Come on. It's historical. You can admit it. It's not like your current reputation. So, okay, it was a whorehouse. Tori McPhail works in a whorehouse. It's fine.
I can tell you some pretty good stories in there, that's for sure, even in my time there.
We need to get more margaritas in you, clearly. Okay. So, yeah, it has a seedy background, but you know that that's why, not why everybody likes it, but that's kind of part of the charm, if you just think of it in a charming way. You're like, yay, New Orleans, anything goes.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, it used to be that even like T and Lally Brennan, they were not allowed to walk on the same side of the street as Commander's Palace when they were little girls.
And they're the current owners, right?
And they are the current owners, right? So their parents said, you will not walk on the same side of the street as that Commander's Palace. Ladies, you will walk on the cemetery side of the street because dead people are a lot safer than what's happening in that place.
That's fantastic.
It used to be yellow.
Painted yellow?
Painted yellow.
Uh-huh.
Kind of beige in color.
Uh-huh.
And T was cruising home one day on her bicycle when she was little and growing up, and there was a big, like, I guess, swatch of paint on the outside, kind of like a test thing,
mm-hmm.
and it was obnoxious, like aqua blue.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you are not painting that restaurant aqua blue. The Brennans had just purchased it, and they wanted to show the neighborhood, hey, man, you know what? There's some different things happening in that restaurant. And so they painted it this obnoxious blue and white, gorgeous Victorian mansion. But I'll tell you, you cannot miss it.
Right.
When you go by it today, woo! It's cool now, but then I can imagine, like, what the hell are you doing? You know?
That's a big change. I like that, though. They're making bold moves. They're like, there's a new game in town.
That's exactly right.
That's fantastic. So, brought it up to modern day.
Yep.
Now it's world class.
That's it.
People come from all over the world. Producer Michelle was just there recently. That was her big night out in New Orleans. Yeah. Oh, her expensive night out. I think every night was a big night out.
It's still a pretty inexpensive place to come to work, or come to eat. I mean, certainly if people want to have a $500 bottle of wine, we'll mm-hmm. be happy to part ways with their money. That is not a problem. Line them up, man. Not an issue. But you can still sit down and lunch and have two courses for $18 and 25-cent martinis.
25-cent martinis.
Monday through Friday every week.
That's hilarious.
And people line up for it too. Right, and the ladies. We even have to put on the bottom of the menu, limit 3. Because that's enough. Yeah.
So, I mean, how's New Orleans doing these days?
It's a blast. Have you been in a while? I know my buddy has over here.
Yeah, Michelle's been recently. I, to my unending shame, have never been.
What the hell?
I know.
Like, why are we talking about it?
I know.
Let's book some tickets. Get your tail down to New Orleans so we can hang out, have fun, cause trouble,
okay.
and make bad decisions.
All my favorite things. These are my hobbies. I would definitely love to. So people are having fun again, or spirits high?
Blast. Really, really, really good time. So we now have double the amount of restaurants that that we once had. Double the amount.
So in the city of New Orleans, there's double the number of restaurants.
Since Katrina. Yeah, so I think we have somewhere near like 1,500 restaurants now.
Double since Katrina. That's really great.
I mean, it is absolutely booming with fantastic young chefs. Everybody wants to come, hang out, party, go to Jazz Fest, run around crazy for Halloween, and eat at an amazing restaurant. Seriously, like the food culture all around the city, even if it happens to be, you know, your regular doctor, lawyer, plumber, I mean, everybody doesn't even think twice about eating out 5 nights a week.
It's just part of the culture there.
It's just part of the culture. That's kind of what we do. It wasn't that way when I first got there years and years ago, but that's kind of what we do now. You know, we're eating breakfast. We're talking about where we're going for lunch. We're eating lunch. We're like, hey, man, what's going on for dinner? That's it.
That sounds like a good time. You're right. Yeah. It's bad that I haven't
been. Good stuff.
I need to go. Tori, thank you so much for joining us.
It is absolutely my pleasure.
Do you want people to follow you on Twitter or anything like that?
Yeah, I am at Tori McPhail.
Okay.
Right? We'll make it really, really easy for everybody, right? Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Cool.
And we'll be visiting you at your restaurant shortly.
Well, sounds great. Thanks for having me, ladies.
Thank you.
All right. Enjoy.